In a world where we're constantly connected, we've never been more alone. Our phones, designed to bring us together, have ironically driven us apart. We text during dinner, check email during meetings, and scroll through social media while our children try to tell us about their day. This digital disconnect has created what MIT professor Sherry Turkle calls a crisis of conversation, and with it, a crisis of empathy. Teachers report alarming trends: middle schoolers forming only superficial friendships, 12-year-olds with the emotional intelligence of 8-year-olds, and students who can't recognize when they've hurt someone's feelings. What happens when we replace eye contact with screen time? When we substitute the messy unpredictability of human interaction with the controlled environment of digital communication? The consequences are profound and far-reaching, affecting everything from our capacity for self-reflection to our ability to form meaningful relationships. Remember the last time you stood in line without checking your phone or sat alone with your thoughts without digital distraction? For many of us, these experiences have become increasingly rare. We've developed what Louis C.K. memorably called an inability to just sit there, reaching for our phones at the first hint of boredom or discomfort. This constant connection prevents us from developing the capacity for solitude, not isolation, but the ability to be comfortable with ourselves. Neuroscience confirms what developmental psychologists have long known: only when alone with our thoughts do we engage our brain's default mode network, which builds our stable sense of self. Without this foundation, we struggle to see others as separate beings with their own thoughts and feelings, the very basis of empathy. Parents increasingly hand smartphones to toddlers to quiet them, the passback, while teenagers measure their self-worth in likes and comments. The result? A generation growing up without learning to be alone with themselves, experiencing what one Fortune 500 executive described as disconnection anxiety when separated from their devices, a panicky feeling that no one cared about me, loved me, after just hours offline. We've always been drawn to measuring ourselves, from Benjamin Franklin's virtue tracking to modern fitness apps. But there's a profound difference between personal reflection and algorithmic analysis. Traditional self-reflection requires vulnerability and privacy. It's messy, non-linear, and deeply personal. The quantified self movement promises something different: efficient, data-driven insights delivered through black box algorithms. Consider Melissa, who once found solace in her handwritten journal where her penmanship revealed her emotional state. After college rejections, she abandoned journaling for Facebook, where she found support but felt stuck scrolling through pointless content. Or Linda, who began writing what she thought her journaling app wanted to hear after it labeled her a self-important introvert. Most troublingly, college student Kara broke up with her boyfriend partly because her happiness tracker showed declining scores, despite no direct correlation. When we outsource self-reflection to algorithms, we risk losing narrative control over our own lives, allowing apps and platforms to define our experiences rather than interpreting them ourselves. Family conversation is where children first learn empathy, emotional regulation, and the pleasure of being heard. Yet these crucial developmental opportunities are increasingly lost to screens. Pediatrician Jenny Radsky observed parents consistently paying more attention to smartphones than to their children, creating what researchers call a still face paradigm that leaves children agitated, withdrawn, and eventually depressed. 15-year-old Leslie describes how her mother's phone use at dinner creates a chain reaction of silence. "My mom is doing her own thing on her phone, and it ends up my dad is sitting there, I am sitting there, my sister is sitting there, and no one is talking." Meanwhile, families increasingly export their conflicts to digital platforms, believing this creates smoother interactions. When Margot grows frustrated with her teenage son's unwillingness to share his whereabouts, she sidesteps conversation by installing a tracking app. While this technological solution gives her the information she wants, it eliminates crucial conversations about responsibility, trust, and boundaries, conversations that build both character and relationship. Conversation died in 2009, declares 26-year-old Trevor, referring to Facebook's rise and the shift from talking to sharing online content. While exaggerated, this sentiment reflects a real transformation in how we connect. Young people increasingly avoid voice calls, finding real-time conversation taxing. Having to listen, respond, and process emotions simultaneously feels overwhelming compared to the controlled environment of texting. College junior Kadi describes exhausting party experiences where friends constantly text to find better parties rather than engaging with each other, illustrating how infinite options create anxiety rather than satisfaction. Phones function as security blankets in social situations, with students automatically turning to their screens in potentially awkward moments rather than engaging with people nearby. College junior Haley describes the 7-minute rule, the time one should wait to see if something interesting develops in conversation before giving up and turning to one's phone. In real conversation, you have to go through so much unpleasantness before you actually hit something, and then it can be really good. This willingness to endure conversational discomfort for potential connection is precisely what we're losing. Dating apps like Tinder epitomized friction-free rejection. You simply swipe left and the rejected person never knows. This efficiency comes at a cost. Studies show a decline in secure attachments as people treat potential partners as abundant commodities. 24-year-old Liam uses Tinder when bored, appreciating how the app eliminates awkward pickup lines. Technology encourages him to see his romantic life as product marketing. He is both product and marketer. Modern daters routinely collaborate on romantic texts, with 20-year-old Dorian spending 10 minutes crafting messages before asking friends to review them. Both men and women consider this acceptable because the stakes are so high. As 30-year-old Gregory puts it, one strike and you're out. When relationships end through text, people are left with unanswered questions. Sloane feels silenced by Evan's breakup text, unable to clarify misunderstandings. Though she wishes she could explain herself, she concludes, "You don't answer a breakup text with a call saying, 'I want to talk.'" The digital medium itself shapes both how relationships form and how they end, often privileging efficiency over emotional closure. Remember that your phone is a psychologically powerful device that changes who you are. Its mere presence divides attention and limits genuine interaction. Create sacred spaces for conversation in daily life. No devices at dinner, in the kitchen, or in the car. Establish these boundaries early as family culture. Practice unitasking to increase performance and reduce stress. Follow the 7-minute rule. Avoid checking your phone during conversation's first 7 minutes. And embrace conversational lulls. View boredom as an opportunity for self-discovery or deeper connection with others. We can choose to reclaim our attention for solitude, friendship, and society by putting technology in its proper place, serving our human needs for connection rather than replacing them.